Good morning. This is Glenn Coble, and you're listening to A Progressive Life. This morning is kind of nasty outside. Came in, and I think I felt a little bit of sleet on my forehead. I have a large forehead, so I get a lot of area to determine that. If you're interested in calling into the show, and we do take call-ins, the number is 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. And again, I'm Glenn Coble, and thanks for listening this beautiful, snowy, nasty weather day. But if you stop and think about it, Christmas is only 3 weeks and one day away. And I hope you all have your Christmas presents ordered, or at least, well, let's just say ordered. The way things go anymore, that's all people do. I guess there's was quite a drop in the number of people that participated in Black Friday, but most merchants have extended Black Friday to Black December. It seems like just about everybody has extended those hours several days instead of just the following day after Thanksgiving. Matter of fact, I heard one of the merchants started on Thanksgiving, which like 6 o'clock Thanksgiving night. I'm sorry for the workers that worked at that place. They didn't get the whole Thanksgiving day off. Anyway, once again, news on the political side is that our current government has voted in the Stand Your Ground rule, and they've also voted in the abortion after 6 weeks ban, which some people refer to as the heartbeat bill. There is talk about revisiting a right to work, which was soundly defeated 3 or 4 years ago. Those three are issues that have been brought up down at the State House. I was invited since I ran for office, I was invited by the Democratic Party to come down and have a Christmas celebration. I'm not sure I'm going to drive all the way down to Columbus to have some finger food and then come back all the way home. But it was nice of them to invite me. Obviously, I didn't win, so I feel if I had won, I'd have showed up, I suppose. We're talking about a progressive life, and in the past 3 or 4 weeks, I have started the show off talking about my life, just so you get to know me. It will end as soon as we get to current times, but right now I am up to... let's see, where did I go? I believe I was at the point where I was about to get married. I was in the Army field band. I had been lucky enough to be selected with another two gentlemen to be a featured act with the United States Army field band, which was the national band of the Army, national touring band of the Army. And during basic training, I was dating a young lady, and her name will remain nameless, but I was dating her, and I thought she was the one that I was going to marry, and she went to France. She was a brilliant student. She went to France. Matter of fact, I think she scored a perfect score on the SAT, if I recall correctly. She went to France. And she said, we got letters back and forth during basic training. She said she'd stay with me forever. And then I found out later that she had contacted my folks and told my folks she was going to break up with me, which she did. And so I was hurt, but I got through basic training fine and went on, and it was around Christmas time, I believe, around this time. It was before Christmas time, but Dad was a minister, and one of the bazaars was going on, I got a letter from a young lady in Valparaiso, Indiana, who said she was responding to a board that was up in my father's church asking people to write to servicemen. And now, if you've ever done that, and a lot of people have, this is my story, and there are some far better stories than my story. But I got the letter the night before, well, just about the time I was going to head back home for Christmas holiday. I only had 3 or 4 days. I was kind of flipping a coin whether I should go or not. I didn't have much money being in the Army. And I decided, because I got this letter from this young lady who said she hoped I was doing well, and if I ever came back to Valparaiso, she'd like to see me. So I decided, okay, I'm going home, and I took off. I was always had a flair for the dramatic. I got home the night that I got the letter, and there was a church program going on that I knew she would be singing in because she has a terrific voice. And so I decided to show up for the choir because I knew all the songs and had been in the choir for years. I showed up at the choir and asked her if or told her that I had gotten her letter, so that's why I came home. It wasn't quite the truth, but it was a little more dramatic the way I said it. And she was impressed, and we started. She had been a cheerleader when I was playing football, so I knew her pretty well. And I had always thought she was kind of pretty. And we decided to go out, and we went out a couple of times. And then she came actually out to Laurel, Maryland, which is where my home was when I was with the Army Field Band, and spent a couple of days out there, and we talked. And the longer we talked, the more likely it was going to be that we were going to get married. And I was kind of on the rebound, but not really on the rebound, because she was a very pretty and very nice lady. 48 years, 11 months, and 7 days later, here I am. I'm still married to her. Thank you very much, Carol Makovsky. Her father was my doctor, Dr. Makovsky. And Carol and I have been married for almost 49 years. That'll be on the 21st of this month. Had a wonderful life with three wonderful kids. Anyway, we got married, and I spent I think another year in the Army. Came out of the Army as a E6, which is three stripes up and one stripe down, just for those of you who are interested in that sort of thing, and moved back to Valparaiso, Indiana, where I got it back into Valparaiso University because I hadn't finished my degree, and several months later, I did qualify to get my degree from Valparaiso University, but meanwhile, I had gone back into my major, which was speech and drama, if you can believe that. And yes, I was an actor, became an actor, and did acting in the theater there in Valparaiso, a dinner theater. And I was I really liked it, except for I could not memorize. And that's a real problem if you're an actor. You need to learn how to memorize. I think I told you the story last week about how we did a show, and the critic said Charlie Brown ought to learn his lines before doing the show, and I was Charlie Brown. I did the theater, and we decided that that was not going to work so much for me. Thought about getting back together with the folk trio because we had done so well throughout the Army Field Band. But that wasn't working because the other two gentlemen were in completely different situations. Joe Peterson, who was our lead singer, was a sound engineer and instrumentalist. He was a fantastic guitar player and also a vocalist with a group out in Reno, Nevada, and had his own little recording studio and recorded Hoyt Axton and a few other pretty big names. And he couldn't make it back. And Bob had been selected for the touring group of Phantom of the Opera, and so he was touring all over the place, and he couldn't come back, so that kind of fell by the wayside. So I ended up taking a job. I got lucky and took a job with Radio Shack, if you recall Radio Shack. Radio Shack gave me a job. I was a manager, and I also worked at a radio station broadcasting at WFLM in Crown Point, Indiana. And both jobs were nice, but didn't pay a lot. And I was successful, but not satisfied. So I started sending out letters because I wanted to get back into athletics. I had been an athlete in high school and a little bit in college, and really wanted to be involved in athletics. So I got sent out, I think it was 72 letters in the month of August. I didn't know it at the time, but that was absolutely the wrong month to try to get a job in athletics, because They were all back in school. The football players were all in their two-a-days, and it just was not a good time to apply for that job. But I didn't know that, so I just sent out letters everywhere. Lo and behold, I got a letter back from DePaul University. DePaul, spelled with an L, and that's the one that's in Chicago, not the one in Greencastle, Indiana, which, by the way, my father was a trustee at, and also my brother and sister graduated from. But I got a letter from DePaul, and they asked me, would I like to be a sports information director? I had no idea what a sports information director was, but they were willing to pay me money to be a sports information director if I was interested. All I had to do is come up, interview, pass the interview, and then we'd go. So I went up, interviewed, got the job. It didn't pay very well, and I had to take a train in and out of Chicago every day. My commute was, if I took the train, my commute was about 2 hours one way. If I drove, it was about an hour and a half one way. We were about 45, 50 miles outside of Chicago, so it was a good trip, and it was pretty slow because of the traffic. But I took the train most days, which took care of about a quarter of the money they were paying me. So it was kind of rough, but my wife was kind enough to say, well, you go ahead. And she was a social worker, and so we were able to afford my indulgence, and I went and became a sports information director at DePaul University. And I believe it was about 6 months later, I was in Utah with the basketball team who had qualified to play in the Final Four. And if you recall that Final Four, that included such notable basketball players as Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and several others who I think we figured out there were about 10 of the kids that played in that Final Four went on to play in the NBA. And we had one. His name was Mark Aguirre, and who eventually became the number one draft choice, I think, of 1980. And we also had a young man, Clyde Bradshaw, who was chosen. We had another one, Gary Garland, who was chosen also. And he was the brother of Whitney Houston, so he had some pretty interesting information. I got to meet his aunt, who is Dionne Warwick. I got to meet her at a game. Gary sang the national anthem for us with help from his mother, who was Sissy Houston, who was a fantastic jazz singer. Anyway, we had an interesting, that year was quite interesting. I knew nothing about what I was doing, except I just kept trying to pump out information about the basketball team. And that's really what sports information was supposed to be doing. I got lucky and was relatively successful at what we did. I learned by going and doing. We went on. We ended up third in that Final Four because we lost to Larry Bird's Indiana State team by, I believe, 2 points. It might have been three. But the young man who was guarding Gary during the entire game had wrenched his knee the night before and was about playing at about 80%. Otherwise, we might have won that game and played against Magic in the final. But Curtis Watkins, a great gentleman, played, was the gentleman that had to guard Larry Bird, and did a fine job considering it was only 80% and he was about 4 inches shorter than Larry Bird. Anyway, that's we went on. I was at DePaul University for about 4 years and met a lot of fantastic people. One of the people that I met was I'm going to have to get back to that because now I can't remember his name. Anyway, we met a lot of, I got to meet Ernie Banks a couple of times. The only big star that I wanted to meet that I never did meet while I was in Chicago was Walter Payton. And I really was sad that I didn't get to meet him. He was my hero, still is. And got to meet Harry Carey, and I'm going to tell you a little story about that. That was kind of a fun day. I got a phone call from my athletic director, who is a priest, Father Gilo, and he said to me, "Glenn, I want to get a new announcer for our basketball team." That was after we went to the Final Four, and we were very popular. I was in charge of orchestrating the television coverage, and WGN had asked us to broadcast our games. We also had some national interest in three or four of the games, and we had interest in the local Chicagoland Sports Network, I believe it was called, and I think they're still in existence. We had to make a decision on who we were going to pick, and I ended up with Father Gilo picking WGN because we believed that we'd get better coverage, even though they only paid us $250,000. DePaul University hadn't seen $250,000 go through the athletic department ever. And they were thrilled about that. But the Chicagoland Sports Network was offering us more than that. But Father Gilo and I felt having 21 games on WGN throughout the United States was better than having 4 games on a Chicago station, no matter what the pay was. And it worked out well. But anyway, I was asked to find a new announcer. We had a gentleman, and his name was Rush. I can't remember his name. Anyway, we had an announcer that was, he was good, but he was a local announcer. A lot of local people in Chicago insisted that we keep him, we felt we needed somebody a little bit better. So Father Gilo asked me to check into Harry Carey. Now, Harry Carey, I believe, was broadcasting for the White Sox at the time. And so I got a phone number from a friend who said, "This is the only phone number I have for Harry, so call this." So I called up, and the guy answered the phone, "Cubby Bear." And I said, "Cubby Bear?" I said, "I'm looking for Harry Carey." All of a sudden, he yells in the background, "Hey, Harry, it's for you." Harry came to the phone a little bit tipsy, I believe, and we started talking, and after we were done talking for about 10 minutes, I told him we'd get back to him, which we eventually did get back to him, but my idea was the language he used and also the state of his inebriation, I thought, was a little bit more than I wanted to have on Catholic television for a Catholic university. And so I went to Father Gilo. I said, "I don't think we can use him." And we ended up using him. But we did get Milo Hamilton, you may remember. We got him to be our broadcaster. He was a big name at the time, and we got him to do it, and he did a fantastic job. But needless to say, Harry went on to do marvelous things with the Cubs, and I'm glad I got the chance to know him. he was a very fine gentleman and had no problems, but you know, the rumors were probably fairly true. He did drink a little bit, and we just didn't want that for a Catholic university. I also had an instance where we were coming back from we are going to a, I guess you'd call it a Las Vegas night, at a Catholic high school. And Father Bob and Ray Meyer, who was our coach, and everybody knew Ray Meyer. They were in the car, and Ray said to me, "Step on it. We're not gonna get there right at the beginning if you don't move." And I said, "Well, I'm doing 70 miles an hour on the Dan Ryan, and we need to go faster." So I went a little faster, and sure enough, in the rear view mirror, I saw the lights flashing at me, and they pulled us over on the Dan Ryan. And the cop came up to the window, looked in the car, saw Ray Meyer, said, "Go on." That's all it took. That's what a big man Ray Meyer was at the time. And everybody loved Ray. Ray was an old grandfather type guy. I had some issues with his wife, but Ray and I got along quite well. He, by the way, he had a great night that night at the Las Vegas night. So anyway, as things go in athletics, DePaul was having a tremendous amount of success with Terry Cummings, Mark Aguirre, and now I'm forgetting some of the names of the kids, but many of the kids were going to be selected by the NBA, and we were getting quite popular at the time. And there was some politics afoot at the university, and they decided they wanted to hire a new, and I'm putting this in quotation marks, a brilliant young athletic director to take the place of Father Gilo, who I personally thought was brilliant, and he was young. He was only, I guess, in his late 30s at the time. And anyway, they hired a new gentleman who will remain nameless, and that gentleman told us all that you better start looking for another job because I'm gonna clear house. And that's kind of what happens in athletics. And I felt horrible for Father Gilo because I thought he had done a wonderful job bringing the basketball team and bringing the athletic department from nothing up to, we were playing in the Horizon in Chicago. And the Horizon at the time was brand new. And there are still teams that play at the Horizon, but it was brand new then. And it's kind of a marvel out by O'Hare Field. And people loved Father Gilo. But the new administration kind of wanted to have their own boy taking care of the business. And so he kind of got rid of all of us. And I was lucky because at the time that he decided he was going to fire everybody, I had been asked, and I had been moved, by the way, I'd been moved up by Father Gilo to assistant athletic director. And I had been asked by Ohio University if I was interested in working for them because they were losing their sports information director / assistant athletic director. And so because of that, I was it was much less of a blow that I was being fired, knowing that I might have a job available. And I decided, okay, let's take that job. So my wife and I came down and visited Athens, Ohio, and loved it. And I'll get into that a little bit more next week. And we'll talk about Athens next week. And the following week, we'll go into what happens when, after 12 or 13 years, when they get tired of you there and get a new president. And you get fired again because you're in athletics anyway. We'll talk about that next week and the week after and probably finish it all up in 3 weeks. And then you'll know everything about me that anybody ever wanted to know, and probably way more than most. This week, last week, state government decided to pass Stand Your Ground law. And as I mentioned last week, I believe, after Florida passed the Stand Your Ground law, murders increased by 21%. So I'm not so certain that's a great idea. The abortion after 6 weeks ban, it was voted on and passed. But both of them have not gotten past the governor's office. And there are a lot of people right now that are trying to make sure it doesn't get past the governor's office. There's talk about the right to work law, which bringing it back up. Now, it hasn't been brought back up, but the right to work law is some people say it's the right to work for nothing law. It's a law that will allow employers to employ you without concern for union wages or anything like that. And basically you work for whatever they tell you you're going to work for, which seems to me to be anti-labor. It doesn't seem to me. I know it's anti-labor, and also probably not good for our economy as far as I can see. I went through some things that were also bugging me a little bit about the current political situation. One of the things that I think we've got to figure out is how to get people in front and put money in the back. Ever since we passed the law that says corporations can are human beings, are Citizens United, we have actually given over to corporations the right to run our government or buy our government, as far as I'm concerned. And people need to be moved back into the front. And corporations, I have no understanding of how in the world our Supreme Court figured that they were people, or they had a right to speak. Now, the people in those corporations, of course, have a right to speak, but I don't think most corporations don't have vocal cords, as far as I can tell, or a brain, for that matter. I'm also looking, we need to find a way to have fairness in our compromises. We need to have compromises. We no longer have compromises. If the ruling party says no, it isn't even talked about, let alone have any compromises. There have been several bills that agree with the popular opinion. Gun control laws, the abortion ban laws, they all are favored by 60-70% of the population, and yet we hear nothing about them because they aren't even brought up. The other thing that's bothering me about our government right now is all the hate. Hate, as far as I'm concerned, hate is incubated by hate speech. It's incubated by people that don't have a positive feeling about America. They talk a lot about how they love America, but it doesn't seem like if you love America, you want to hate somebody who is in America. The diverse populations that we have, I believe it comes from fear more than anything else. And I believe we need to find a way of getting away from that. Last year, hate crimes rose to over 1,000 people over the year before. So it's just gotten a little bit out of control. I thought there were some things that maybe we could do to help solve this problem. And I think we have to work together. I can't imagine that if everybody gets together, or at least attempts to compromise with each other so that we make a better government rather than making a worse government, I think it would help a lot. One of the things I thought about, and I know many of these things either can't be done or won't be done or will be difficult to get them done, and this is one of them, and that's to put a cap on CEOs' salaries. You put a cap on it. Now, I know, I can hear the phones getting ready to ring, but you put a cap on the CEO's salary based on the percentage of the lowest paid employee. So if the lowest paid employee is making $10, you put a cap of, I don't know, 100% above that or 1,000%, whatever you put it, then that holds the CEO to making only that amount of money in all forms. I'm talking about if he has all those golden parachute things and has the stocks and bonds, that's all included in this money. And I think they would have to work hard on how they do that formula. But I believe what that would do is the CEOs want to make money. Obviously, that's why they are where they are. And if their lowest paid employee is only making $10 and they can only make 400% above that, they're going to want to raise the lowest employee's salary so that their salaries will go up as well. And I think that will help everybody all around. It will cut down on the discrepancy between the high and the low. And you can, I know it's artificial, but it could be done that we could actually have the exact amount between the high and the low and make it, if your company does really well, your new employees, your lowest paid employees will make a lot more money. And it probably means a lot more to them than it means to a CEO. There are CEOs that are making hundreds of millions of dollars a year. If not, I don't know if there is a CEO that's making over $1 billion a year, but there are certainly several that are making hundreds of millions of dollars. I saw one company that actually has two CEOs, and both of them are making about $37 million a year. Now, what in the world does somebody do with $37 million? I know, I hear you saying it. I'd like to try. We all would like to try. But that doesn't get things done. All that does is put the money in that person's pocket, and it never gets to the worker. It never gets down to anybody other than maybe a few people where they buy their Mercedes or where they buy their Lamborghini or something like that. And I heard a very interesting discussion by a gentleman on TED Talks where he was talking about he was a multimillionaire, and he says, I can't spend that type of money, the money I'm making. There just aren't enough cars and enough houses and enough places that I can spend all that money. And he was only a multimillionaire, not a billionaire. Another thing is we need to make laws to fill the weaknesses that are used by the unscrupulous officials who would cheat the established traditions. Now, what I mean by that is we need to find rules to plug the holes where it's been traditional that we don't allow our, let's say, I'm just going to use President Trump. We assume that we will have his financials, and then that's so that we can find out about the emoluments that he might be getting and any illegal payments and things like that. But anyway, that was gotten around because nobody had ever made a law about that. They had just, tradition had said you don't do that, or that you do that. You do provide your financial reports. There are dozens of laws like, and they're not even laws, they're just statements of established traditions. And and if you don't have a law, the person at the top doesn't have to abide by any of them. So I think we need to look about plugging some of those holes. We need to return to regular order in our legislation. We need to get back to everybody gets a vote rather than only one person gets a vote. We have a situation now where certain people have enough power that they don't even have to bring the Roe versus Wade back into the House or any corrections on that because they don't want to, even though the population by 70% approves of Roe versus Wade. We also need to look into replacing or removing or revamping. I would approve of just getting rid of the Electoral College. It may have covered a weakness when we started, but it certainly has done nothing for modern America except for put the person into office who had not won the popular vote, which takes the operation or the one person, one vote rule and just throws it out the window. We need to make that one person, one vote rule stronger by either getting rid of gerrymandering or finding a better way to and a more even way of establishing representation in the states. It should not be the opportunity for the ruling party, whether it's Republican or Democrat, to establish a, well, right now, I think I heard that the Democrats had like 54 or 55% of the vote and only got, I'm making these numbers up because I don't remember exactly what it is, but they got far fewer seats than the Republicans got based on the vote. And I think that should it shouldn't be true either way. The Democrats shouldn't have the power now. Let's say Trump loses and the Democrats take over the Senate. They shouldn't have the right to go and steal the election by gerrymandering their people into the voting slots. Another thing that came out this week that I think we need to seriously look at, and I think we need to be smarter in the United States government, the global warming report came out last week, and it was met with some consternation, especially by our president, but also by his party members. They kind of looked the other way. Now, this is one a report that is done by the most brilliant, the most agreed to experts in the United States about, or maybe even the world, in what is happening to the Earth. Now, if we don't agree that there's global warming, after watching the forest fires that we've had, I know we got cold weather outside right now. That means it's not, there is no global warming is an absolute fallacy. It's a national, it's a global thing. It's not a climate thing, and it's not an individual weather thing. The overall global warming thing is where I think the last 17 years we've had continued higher temperatures of the globe, and that's not helping any of this. Matter of fact, well, it is helping the fires. It is helping the blooms of algae. It is helping the horrible winds and hurricanes that we've had. And I think we need to be a lot smarter about that, and we need to trust our most intelligent people. Now, I understand several hundred years ago, we all thought the Earth was flat. But as the new people came and saw more evidence, they realized the Earth wasn't flat. Now, there are still people that think the Earth might be flat. That's kind of surprising. Anyway, I think we need to strive to follow the Bill of Rights with corrections for the current times. The Second Amendment is one of those particular ones that I think we need to upgrade for what's the technology that we have. We need to find a way to make our government honest again. It used to be that if the president said it, or if a governor said it, or if a senator said it, you believed it. Now, they all kind of fudged the truth sometimes, but you believed it was based on a fact that everybody could go back to. Now, the facts are just kind of made up as they go. We need to make sure that we have equality for all. And I mean all. I don't mean everybody is white. I don't mean everybody who's well-educated. I don't mean everybody who has a lot of money. I mean everyone. Everyone should have equality, and they should receive fairness in that equality. It goes back to the golden rule. Wouldn't you prefer our government do unto you as you would do unto other people? That's something we need to get back to. We have disagreements with I'm going to pass on that one, but we need to have concern about our strangers, the strangers in our midst. The immigrants that came from Italy, or the immigrants who came from Ireland, were absolutely chastised when they came to the United States. And we're basically doing the same thing to people from the Spanish-speaking countries to our south. We need to find a way to get around that. And we need to use critical listening. One other thing we don't do anymore is actually listen to what the other person is saying, think about it, and decide whether it's right or wrong, not whether it helps me or helps them. That doesn't do anybody any good. It's just greed is what that comes down to. And we need to use critical listening, which also means you have to understand that you're going to be wrong sometimes. And you need to make sure that if you're wrong, you can admit to it. And there's nothing wrong with saying I'm sorry. There's nothing wrong with being wrong. You need to be brave enough to be wrong, admit it, and move on, and maybe take up for the other side that you'd been fighting so much for. Well, anyway, I guess I've been on my soapbox enough, and I appreciate you listening. This program I call A Progressive Life, and I'm Glenn Coble. I'd love to hear from you. Now, it's going to be too late now. We've only got a few seconds left, but I would love to hear from you. And just write this down for next week, maybe. 740-383-9944. And I'd love to hear from you. And we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about if you call in. Well, there might be some things that we can't talk about, but... Well, thanks for listening, and I hope you'll tune in next week at the same time. Bye-bye.
Radio 107.1 FM, the place for holiday fun. For legendary pro wrestler reading "Twas the Night Before Christmas," Thunderbolt Patterson.
Heaven high, this is Thunderbolt Patterson. It was the night before Christmas when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stocks were all hung by the chimney with care, and hoping that Saint Nick would soon be there. Hey, hey, y'all get ready now. You know what it's all about? It's all about Christmas and them presents. All y'all know about them. He spoke not a word, but went straight to work. Y'all know who I'm talking about. He spoke not a word and went straight to work and filled all the stocking, then turned with a jerk and laid his finger aside of his nose and gave a nod up the chimney he rode. He sprung on his sleigh and his team gave a whistle and away they all flew like a down of a whistle. But I heard it now.